when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good afternoon, people out there in radio land. It is December the 29th in the year of our Lord, 2018, the year of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ Almighty, who died a little over 2,000 years ago. Listen, people, we will bring you a very special radio show tonight. We're going to bring you a recorded interview. We could not bring it live because they are in an airplane right now. Our brother Rich Hamblin is in South Africa, even as we speak, with our other brother Simon Roach. And I'm not going to dally any at all. I'm going to open up with a silent prayer, a little quick prayer, and we're going to go right into the interview because we got a long ways to go and a short time to get there. If you will, people, please bow your heads right now. Oh, dear Lord, thank you so much for protecting our brother Rich Hamblin and his wife on this arduous trip over there. Thank you for protecting Simon Roach while they've been over there. Thank you for saving our South African brothers and sisters at this point in time, though, Lord, even though they were in such incredible danger. Lord, thank you for blessing Liberty News Radio and blessing us with the one and only Sam Bushman, who's a wizard and who's helped put this taping together. How he did it, I'll never know, but he did it. And Lord, thank you for blessing Blood River Radio and letting us stay on the air this much time. And Lord, thank you, thank you, thank you. And Lord, I just ask one more thing. Please help us. Tell us what to do. Tell Liberty News, Blood River, tell us how we can do, like we asked Simon today. What can we do, Simon, to help you and the South African people? Oh, Lord, tell us what we can do to please you. Let us do God's work. With that, I'm going to shut up and go straight to our wonderful interview with Rich Hamblin and Simon Roach. Take it away,
fellas.
Good
afternoon, everybody. It is December the 29th in the year of our Lord, 2018. We've just survived another Christmas. We're coming up on a New Year's Eve soon, and we have another special guest, the same special guest we had last week. We have Rich Hamblin, our brother in arms. He has traveled over to South Africa. Have you been listening to the radio show? If you've been listening to Blood River Radio, you know he's been over there, him and his beautiful wife, over there with Simon Roach. And he's going to bring us another special report tonight from South Africa. Rich, are you there, fella?
Yes, sir. Almost Happy New Year from South Africa.
Well, I tell you what, Sam has moved heaven and earth to make this show happen tonight. And we've had a few technical difficulties. I had to switch my earphones. I couldn't understand why I couldn't hear anything. But we got it solved. And we're, with miracle of miracles, we're talking to you from around halfway around the world, fella. So has anything happened differently? Is there any new news or tidbits that we haven't heard about since last week?
Not that I'm presently aware of. There's a lot to talk about, but it's been pretty quiet where we are. In fact, I was told today that this is practically the last all-white town in the entirety of South Africa, and it's a little small place. We're situated on the Orange River and overlooking the Vanderkloof Dam. Now, dam for South Africa means a lake or even any body of water. So what when I say the dam, we went out on the lake this afternoon for about a 2-hour cruise and saw some of the wildlife and some of the scenery, and it was quite pleasant. It's been warm here, unlike back in Tennessee where I hear it's rainy and cold, but it's been averaging around 100 degrees here, but very low humidity. So we're enjoying the hot weather and kind of dreading going back to the cold weather back in Tennessee.
Well, boy, I wish I had some hot weather. You know, I've got old, and This is a kind of a little rabbit trail, but maybe the audience will like to hear. You know, everybody knows how I run marathons. I was on a training run last Tuesday, matter of fact, and the temperature was about 29 degrees, and I ran across the pedestrian bridge, the Memphis, Arkansas bridge that goes across the Mississippi River. The bridge is about a little over a mile long. I got over to the Arkansas side, Rich, and I tell you what, the wind shifted, the sun went behind the clouds. I had shed clothes on the way because you sweat. All runners know you sweat and you have to shed clothes. I didn't think I was going to make it back. I mean, the temperature dropped. I've never seen temperature drop like that. And I had to kick up the speed, and it was miserable. But I could sure use some of that hot weather here myself, fella. Well, speaking of hot, a different type of hot. I've been hearing my man Matt, who I don't think Matt can be here tonight because he had a hot load. One of our trusted co-hosts, he has to work this show in his job. I won't tell what he does because I don't want the Antifa to find out where he is, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think he can be here tonight. Things have happened fast today on several fronts. But speaking of hot, in a physical way, has anything, this may be a repeat of myself, has the situation in parts of South Africa, have they deteriorated in as far as has it gotten more dangerous even? Are we any closer to the revolution there now than we were a week ago?
It's always dangerous here. I mean, there was a farm murder last night, and they're continuing apace. And most people until they come to South Africa, and I didn't understand it. I mean, I recommended everyone get on a plane and get over here if they can, because it's you really get a different perspective on the ground than you would just by even from what we learned from things. You know, we're kind of plugged into it. For people that have no understanding of what it is, it's kind of an eye opener. But the part of South Africa I'm in is basically a desert, and the European settlers have come in here and they turned a desert into a garden by means of irrigation and water projects and all this kind of stuff. But as a result, the farms are quite large. Commercial farms are quite large, and they're isolated. So they're easy pickings for any marauding gang of thugs that wants to go at it. And as I understand it, there was another murder last night, and they're averaging about, I could be wrong, probably two or three a week. And it's just, you know, I don't know, the numbers are dwindling, you know. And the resolve is still here, but, I mean, it's still murders. Because, I mean, farms are quite spread out. There's not, it's hard communicating from place to place. And of course, it's hard getting help to come in. And the police are absolutely useless as far as any kind of preventive stuff goes. And you've got
men and material and that kind of thing.
It's power, higher authorities and stuff, and these gangs that are going around killing the farmers, attacking and killing the farmers. So in that respect, it hadn't gotten any worse. We haven't been in any real dangers here. We've been kind of safeguarded pretty much. We did spend a night in Johannesburg, but we were shuttled from the airport to a secure hotel and then back to the airport to fly down to Bloemfontein, which is sort of in the middle of the country. It's the judicial capital of the country. But the impression I get of South Africa is everything's just kind of...
Well, folks, we'll be right back for this rest of this riveting interview. I cannot tell you how chills go up and down my spine for this interview. Anyway, hang on. We'll be right back in just a minute.
Week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters. At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power,
you know, they had a tendency to tilt
things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky?
People, we're coming right back to this wonderful interview right now. Without further ado, we're going to get right back to it. Go ahead and take it off. Take it away, fellas.
Yeah, we had a once clean and glorious way of life down here, and it's just gone shabby. I mean, trash is everywhere. There's weeds growing up through the cracks in the sidewalks. There's just, you know, buildings are unpainted. A lot of abandoned places. We see a lot of abandoned farmsteads across the country because I think the number of farmers has dropped by about 50% since 1994. And it's just, you know, it's just like a gradual decline. Some of the roads are good, are very good, but most of them are just kind of, you know, potholes and some of them aren't even paved, and they rarely get graded, and there's a lot of washboard effects, if you know what I mean. We're fortunate to have a car to where we can drive around to some of the historical sites around here, which we've enjoyed very much in the last couple of days. But the once bustling, beautiful little towns, they call them dorps, which is a Dutch word. You go through them, and it's just like, it's like driving through downtown Memphis, if you know what I mean. You know, going through the seedier sections of a big city, it's just trashy. Yeah. So the situation is, you know, it's not any better. It's not any. It's just gradually declining to a level where to where the kids growing up today, the ones that have been born after 1994, have no understanding of what it used to be. You know, what a first world country is, which is what South Africa used to be. We happen to be next to a big hydroelectric water plant, you know, a dam for that's created a lake for irrigation and stuff. And it produces quite a lot of electricity for the country. But because of the power shortages at the other plants, they're having to draw down the lake extraordinary lengths, and it's down to like 78% of its normal level. And as we were cruising around the dam, you know, the lake, we could see private owned boat docks that were like, you know, 10, 15 feet out of the water now. You know, when they were built, they led directly into the water, but now they're all stuck on dry land. So the general feeling I have is that everything's just kind of run down. Like, you know, nobody's taking care of it anymore. And there's a lot of people that are awoke, but there's also a lot of people that are in denial or just, it's like America. I mean, it's like going through the worst, you know, the less attractive parts of America. And it's kind of like we're looking into the future that we in the USA are going to face if, you know, we can't turn things around.
We're halfway there, Rich, and I would think we're maybe further along than halfway to where South Africa is. You mentioned the cops. Well, you know, back in I grew up in the worst part of South Memphis, and we used to call it the slums. They call it the hood nowadays. And we had a saying about the cops. They were radar by day, crowbar by night. That's what we used to call them. In fact, we got in trouble saying that. That preceded the word the pigs. Later on, the people called the cops pigs. The bad cops. There's some good cops. But I would think, and I'll run it by you, you know, the blacks, cops are being perhaps cops by day. Maybe they've even progressed past that point where they don't even pretend to be cops of the day. But by night, they're probably out there. I'm a betting man. I would bet that a percentage of the black cops that are cops by day are probably in there killing and looting at night. What do you think about that, my brother?
Well, that's a possibility. I think there have been some cases where there's been some collusion. But generally, they're incompetent. They're, you know, half time you go in a police station and they're sleeping, that kind of stuff. So they're not, they're not very efficient. I guess that's one thing that that South Africa has a benefit where the United States doesn't, which is that the government is just very inefficient and not very, not very adept at their jobs. Whereas in the United States, it's a completely different picture. I mean, there's still some serious people that are working in all levels of government. One thing I've discovered in here, in studying the history and going around and visiting the historical sites, the ones which are hard to find, by the way, it's, in America, they always advertise the battlefields and historical monuments and all that kind of stuff in hopes of generating tourist revenue. I think here it's more of an attitude of just kind of a grudging acceptance by the current government that they've got to maintain some of these sites, but they don't really keep them up. They're just kind of run down like everything else. Yesterday we went to the battlefield of Magersfontein, which is north of here near Kimberley, where the Boer army stopped the British as they were trying to advance north in their eventual conquest of the Boer republics. And it's a fairly large park. It's fairly rugged. We went from one end of it to the other almost, and it's very, very moving. The museum there is, it's a small museum, but it's still kept up. We were going to go to a battlefield at Paardeberg, and I was starting to read about it, and we pretty much run out of time, but it was, the museum there had been abandoned and looted, and there were, I saw a post about where they were building a new one, to take the place of the old one. And so, these places are really hard to find. I mean, I had a guidebook, which was aimed toward, the battlefields of South Africa, and we had a hard time even using the directions in there locating the place. But once we got there, it was well worth seeing. There was even a monument to the Scandinavian contingent, which died almost to a man at the Battle of Magersfontein. Wow. It's so different than what the Swedes and those people are doing these days. Back then, they were real men. So unlike the ones that are just inviting the third world in to destroy their civilization. The day before that, we went to Bloemfontein, which was the judicial capital of South Africa, and went to the Anglo-Boer War Museum. And it was like almost like stepping into the old South Africa. I mean, it was completely dedicated to the Afrikaner and the Boer resistance. And there were a couple of things thrown in there for the benefit of the English. And one wing they added on to demonstrate the sufferings of black people under in the wartime situation. But there's a monument there called the National Women's Monument, and it was raised to all the civilians that were rounded up by the British during their scorched earth policy, which was instituted by Lord Kitchener when he became the commander down here. And it's estimated that there's in excess of 30,000 white women and children and old and elderly that perished in the camps from disease. And basically they went through the countryside, burned down all the farmhouses, killed the stock, and rounded up the women and children and non-combatants and put them in, I forgot the number of camps, but it was a large number of camps scattered out, which were basically tents out in the open. Sanitation was poor, food was poor, and people died by the scores, including infants and small children. They also rounded up the black farmhands and the black families that are on farms in the same areas, and about somewhere around 30 or 35,000 of them perished in these very same camps. So I guess the British were an equal opportunity murderer in this case, and it destroyed the countryside. And I'm seeing more and more parallels between what the South suffered in the Civil War, and in the Reconstruction under Yankee domination. And Sherman, you know, did the same thing on his march to the sea.
Exactly.
Steal it. If he couldn't steal it, he burned it or killed it, you know, even to the point of nailing dogs to the barn house doors and all this kind of stuff. And that's basically the kind of policy that the British carried out to submit the Boers, get the Boers to submit to their rule. And it was pretty harsh, and there's still a lot of resentment underneath the surface between the Afrikaans-speaking people and the English-speaking people.
No kidding.
And just like there is still, you know, it used to be in the South. I think it's kind of disappearing now. But, you know, there's still a lot of us in the South that don't really care for Yankees. You know what I mean, Eddie?
Well, you're talking to one of them. I'm telling you something. You know, you stole my thunder about William Tecumseh Sherman. They must have, you know, the British must have taken lessons, gone to military school under William Tecumseh Sherman.
Oh, they had to.
The branch of West Point. You know, because of, I don't know if it's true, but William Tecumseh Sherman, I think, was credited with saying that the war was hell. In fact, I've even heard that it got to be so bad, that got to be so cruel, that it even started to affect him at the end of the war. But I don't think that man even had a conscience. I don't think he was capable of feeling any sympathy or empathy for any of them.
Well, people, we got to go right back to we got to go to a commercial right now. We got to pay some bills. We will be coming right back with this taped interview we did coming straight out of South Africa, just for your benefit, in just a few minutes. Hang on to your seats.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
So, you two are real actors, huh?
Well, I was an extra on a soap opera for 3 years.
And I'm best known for starring in cat food commercials.
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Oh, just during dinner for the next few years, probably until you're both off to college. Your real parents will be back every night at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock?
Hey, your dad's busy. He's got work, softball, client functions.
Yeah, and your mom, she's got the literary club and play rehearsals. So.
Don't you worry. They'll be back on time.
Otherwise, we get time and a half.
Ka-ching! Okay, according to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Yes.
Okay, I guess.
Ooh, is that the best you can do?
I think I want my real parents.
I don't see that in the script.
No ad-libbing, please.
There's no substitute for a loving parent. And when you're really there, you'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal.
We're right back, people. We're not going to waste any more time. We're going to get right back to this interview because we're having a hard time getting it all cranked in. So go right back to where you were, Rich. You know, I know this is another aside, but the little 7x57 Mauser, a lot of people call it the 7mm Mauser. A lot of the Boers gave the British khakis a shooting lesson with that little 7x57 Mauser.
Oh yeah, the Boers knew the war was coming. The British had tried several times to, or had previously, in what was known as a failed raid called the Jameson Raid, to invade the Transvaal and the Free State and subdue them because of, you know, the mineral wealth that was up there. And I mean, the British were, you know, they were, the Boer War didn't happen. I mean, the British precipitated it, and they worked for a long time to make it happen. And finally, the Boers, told them to quit massing their troops on the border, and failing that, they were going to declare war. And of course, the British refused to. So that's how the war started. And it lasted 3 long years, and it was devastating to the Afrikaner nations. I mean, they were totally laid waste by the British troops. I mean, it got to the point where, it was like Sheridan in the Shenandoah Valley, you know, and that kind of stuff. Okay. And people suffered greatly, you know, and they suffered a lot of casualties. There were, I think there were only about maybe 9,000 battle casualties, but there were, there's a tremendous number of civilian casualties. And the monument is very moving. I took some pictures. I've sent some to you and Matt and James. And they've, the nation suffered a lot. There were over 32,000 that were exiled to various parts of the British Empire, captured and exiled. And, it was a very sad experience. And there were people that, just like some of us Southerners, just hung on to the very end. We saw a statue of Bloemfontein called the Bitter Ender. And it was a Boer soldier on a broken-down horse. You know, the ribs were showing, and he was in rags himself and very unkempt, and kind of slumped down and very tired-looking. But he was one of the ones that just hung on to the very end of the war, and had to be talked into accepting the peace agreement. So it's long history here, long history of suffering, just like there was in the South. And, but the Boers came back. And they built a nation here, this has become what was a first world country, and now they turned it over by, I don't know if it's loss of nerve or treachery or whatever, to the black majority, and it's just like everywhere else in Africa. Once the white people leave, from being in charge, everything's just kind of going downhill, and it's going further and further and further.
You know, Rich, what's some of the things you told me about that war? Several comments here. A Marine colonel gave a speech back in the 2014, I probably said this on the air before, at the back of the 2014 political cesspool family reunion party in Memphis, Tennessee. I've never forgotten it. He said that amateur study tactics and professional study logistics. Well, studying logistics probably wouldn't have done the Afrikaners any good, really, because I don't know the statistics in the war and the number of men involved, et cetera, but I would estimate that the British greatly had probably an inexhaustible supply of men compared to the Afrikaners. Just like, and you compared that war with our war here in the United States against, Lincoln's war. The South had, when we lost a man, he was irreplaceable. We couldn't replace him. Lincoln was bringing, the North had a great number of people compared to the South, a greater population. And they found out he was even bringing in foreigners. He was even bringing Hessians and bringing in the Russians. In fact, I think the Russian Navy was even involved against the South at one time. So they just beat us down, and we just ran out of men, like the Germans did in World War II, fighting the whole world. I mean, get that. The German army fought the entire world alone and held them off for 7 years or so. I mean, so, as fine as soldiers as the Afrikaners were, probably the best soldiers in the world, probably none better. You have to have the beans, band-aids, bacon, and bullets, or you just can't operate. If you can't have those supplies, they just couldn't make it. And I would submit that the same forces that were running the British Empire when they made war on our white brothers in South Africa, those same people were running the show in the American Civil War, and they're the same people running the show attacking us now here in the United States, attacking South Africa, attacking, trying to open the gates in all of Eastern and Western Europe. It's the same same satanic force, Rich. That's just my opinion. What is yours on that?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. I've spent quite a lot of time with Sightlanders over here, and they are the ones that are most conscious of the situation, and they're doing active civil defense preparations for what they see as the coming catastrophe, and it could happen, you know, as soon as 5 or 6 months, talking to a lot of them. But we're fighting the same globalist forces, and the South Africans have, the white South Africans have one advantage over us, is that they're still fairly religious, even though the Dutch Reformed Church and all the mainline churches here in South Africa are just as bad as the ones in the United States, the establishment churches and all that. But the Boers that I've met are deeply religious, and they got that abiding faith in God, and that they think that God will show his favor on them if they continue steadfast and obey him in obedience to him and so on. And that's why it will be hard to pry the white South Africaners, especially the older ones, out of this country with a crowbar. I mean, they've been here 8, 9, 10, 11 generations, and they feel like this is their land as much as it is anybody else's, and they've worked for it and earned it fair and square, so they shouldn't be deprived by illegal means, as the ANC is and the government is talking about with the land expropriation without compensation. So we're fighting the same forces. This is the same globalists that are running the media, you know, and running the banks and all that kind of stuff. They run the show down here in South Africa, and they're calling the shots behind the scenes on a lot of this stuff that's going on. And they're orchestrating a lot. In fact, I'd go so far as to say, as a globalist, don't really care if there's not a living soul left in South Africa, as long as they can come in and step in and exploit the mineral wealth and the strategic position with the Cape of Good Hope. Because if the Middle East flares up and the Suez Canal is destroyed, then the southern trade routes are going to be critical. And right now, the Chinese are positioning themselves in a big way in southern Africa. There are 13 police stations, contingents run by the Chinese, ostensibly to provide security for their own people that are working down here behind the scenes, developing resources and stuff like that.
You know, you mentioned Red China. I hope I can get to another question in a minute that Matt wanted me to ask. But you mentioned Red China. That's a great, a big interest of mine. I remember back during Nixon's administration. I hope this didn't go in getting too heady or whatever. But he was instrumental. Following the orders of David Rockefeller, the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateralists, he made a move to Red China, and they are the ones single-handedly that built Red China up from just a fourth world nation to a modern industrial power they are now. And this is my words, nobody else's, but there's nothing on earth that a Zionist Jew hates worse than a white Russian Christian. They hate the Russian Christians more than they do any other Christian on earth, even more than the Germans. That being said, I'm thinking that because it's my belief with the Zionist in control of the World Bank, the Bank of International Settlements, and they can also shut the lifeblood of the Red Chinese is the trade with the United States. So I'm thinking, Rich, that these people, the same people we're talking about, these same globalists that are hating us, that fighting us in every way, and I'm just guessing, I think that they're probably sponsoring the move of Red China into South Africa and all over South Africa, South and all other parts of Africa, just to be a thorn in the side of the white Christians there in South Africa. Is that a rabbit trail? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's in all likelihood, but the Chinese are definitely on the move. They have been for the last 30 years. I mean, they back various sides in the civil wars or the wars of independence, I guess, that were taking place. And they're clearly, I saw an article the other day where the Chinese loaned money to the Kenyan government for major seaport. And when they failed to repay the loans, they basically foreclosed on a facility and have taken it over. So they're doing that kind of stuff. And it could happen to us too, because the Chinese are, you know, they're running Long Beach Harbor, you know, they're on both ends of the Panama Canal. They're everywhere. And of course they're all over the United States. You just got to open your eyes and look, and you can see them everywhere at the universities and large cities, and even in places like Nashville. You know, you see Chinese where I used, never saw them when I was a kid. But the same forces that are working down here are the same forces that are working everywhere to destroy Christian civilization, especially white Christian civilization. And it's just a whole different ballgame. But I do recommend that anybody that's listening to this broadcast, that, you know, if they got the means to come over here and visit South Africa and visit with the Sightlanders and see what's going on the ground here and talk to people. We've been to two different farmsteads and kind of got a run of the spectrum on the operations here. And it's the
okay, people, we're going right back to, we've got to take a break, we're going to pay some bills, and we'll come back as soon as possible to this riveting interview by Rich Hamblin, Simon Rose, coming brought to you straight out of South Africa today.
If Planned Parenthood were what they publicly declare themselves to be, they would welcome transparency. We all know why they hide, because we know what they hide. We can confirm federal judges who follow the Constitution rather than reverse engineer their preferred policy outcomes. The truth about abortion is spreading because of advances in medical imaging, because of brave journalists, tireless activists, compassionate doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. The rising generation of young Americans is the most pro-life in decades because they know too. And one day soon, we will reaffirm our nation's principles in their dignified fullness and avow once again that all men are created equal. All are entitled to life.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
Okay, people, we're going right back to the interview with Rich and Simon coming straight out of the South Africa. We've got them trying to cram it all in. This is a taped interview.
And it's kind of amazing to see how this place still operates in spite of itself. But for how long, who knows? I've got Simon Roche here, if you want to.
Oh, yes, I've got a question to ask for Simon. Thank you very much, Rich.
Okay.
You did a wonderful job, my brother. Wonderful job. I have a question for Simon. As a matter of fact, the question came from Matt.
All right. Okay, well, I'll hand the phone to him right now.
Okie doke.
Hello?
Hey, Simon, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I can hear you, Eddie.
Oh, great. Simon, what? How so wonderful, wonderful to talk to you, my brother. We're about to run out of time, I have other questions, but I'm going to ask a question that Matt Goodwin wanted me to ask. He couldn't be with us tonight. Listen, there were a number of families from South Africa that the Russians took in. Matt was telling me about that. I think he said, was it 1,600 of them? Do you know anything about that? And if you do, how are they doing in Russia?
I don't know very much about them, although I do know the man who was the leader of that initiative. You know, Eddie, there are a few Afrikaner Boer families, farming families, that have gone to places like Georgia, Armenia, and Russia, and so on, but not in large numbers. The costs are prohibitive, and the culture is very alien. Many more Boer farmers have taken the fairly large risk of going to places like Zambia and the Congo, because they're just up the road from South Africa. You know, they're just a couple of hours' flight from their mothers or their siblings or whoever they're close to. Going to Russia, the costs involved, setting up a farm from nothing in a language that you cannot begin to understand, with none of your kith and kin near you, is not as appealing a prospect as it may seem to outsiders to be.
I see. I'll tell you, I'll tell you what, Simon, it's plain to me. Rich mentioned that South Africa, y'all are ahead of us as far as being spiritual, being Christians. Our Christian churches, we're in a shambles here. It's clear to me that we're going to have God on our side. If we do not return to God and ask for his help, I think there's no way out. It looks like the trap has been set. And like you said, I think the python or your phrase, I think the python has already coiled around us. I think he only needs one more notch. We're about to run out of time. I really don't know how much time we have left, but with what time we have left, Simon, is there anything you'd like to say? Why don't you put out the link to Southlanders again while we're here, and any other information that that we could do, Liberty News Radio, Blood River Radio, what information can we get out to help you and your people there in South Africa?
Well, thank you very much, Eddie. Anybody who is interested in donating to us, we would appreciate the funds. Richard has been out here, a chap from Ohio, a chap from Michigan, a guy from Washington State. There have been all sorts of people out here. They've come and seen for themselves how do we live. I believe that the general impression is that we make good use of the funds given to us, and we are preparing something absolutely magnificent. If people would like to donate, please, please, please. It is very helpful to us. People can donate via PayPal. There is a link on the homepage of our website, saitlanders.org. SUIDLANDERS.org. SUIDLANDERS.org. That is Saitlanders in our language. And other than that, spread the word. If you want to come out here and see for yourselves, confirm for yourselves, corroborate for yourselves, verify for yourselves, ascertain for yourselves whether we have integrity, whether we are good people, whether what we're doing is true, please come and take a look. We know that money doesn't grow on trees. We know that it's not equally easy for everybody. But if you come and see for yourselves, you will understand. And that's the most valuable thing for us, because every person who comes here goes back and produces a video like Lauren Southern, or writes an article for Harper's Magazine, like we just had one of the top journalists in the world here recently. You know, people, once they've seen the reality on the ground, I think it makes a bit of a difference.
And one final question I have, Simon. Thank you so much, Simon. I have one final question. In the event that it does happen, the worst happens very quickly, people wanting to come from all over the world to volunteer, to be soldiers in the trenches, to be to operate in your civil defense group, I doubt if they could get firearms in. Or how many soldiers could you equip in the field with beans, boots, band-aids, and bullets, Simon?
Eddie,
I'm talking about foreigners coming from over the world.
That's a very, very difficult question to answer, because it could be misconstrued by a prejudicial court. in answering you and participating in either sedition or insurrection. And as you know, regardless whether it's true or not, they could misconstrue it. As you know, we're a legal, lawful organization, the largest organization of our kind in the world. All evidence points to that, and we've never had any contradiction, not that we know every organization of our type personally, but we are large, successful, active, strong, fit, healthy, preparing for a civil war. And we believe that we will receive support from like-minded, God-fearing Christian white people from across the world when this crisis begins. And we'll have to address the nitty-gritty of that closer to the time. In our current state, as it were, in our current circumstances, the current legal paradigm, I wouldn't like venture any sort of opinion on arms and weapons and men and material and that kind of thing. It's just not the preparation we are making right now, and it's much less the preparation we would encourage anybody else to be thinking or planning on at this point in time.
I totally understand. And I guess I was premature in asking that question. It's just such an alarming situation that you're in over there, and it seems to us over here in this country that the whole thing could explode any minute. God bless you, Simon. God bless you so much for what you're doing. God bless people in South Africa. I've heard people say, well, they need this to get the hell out of there. Well, for one thing, where the hell are they going to go? Where else could you go?
Stand and fight for what is right, Eddie. It's what our forefathers did. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times over and over and over and over again, they didn't cut and run unless the circumstances were absolutely exceptional, such as with the Huguenots. I mean, they had been killed, you know, almost to a man, and they decided that the last option they had was to cut and run. But as long as we can, as long as we're strong and fit and healthy, we can't go for what I should leave South Africa to expose my children to the same perversities in Australia, in a different form perhaps, but the same perversities, the same liberal madness, the same abortion, the same bulldust being rammed down their throats at school. No, it's not the answer. The answer is to stand. We've had good lives, Eddie. We've had it all handed to us on a plate. You, me, Richard, everybody, we've all had good lives compared to our forefathers who sweated blood just to get to the age of 25 and then sweated more blood to bring up a family. And if they were very fortunate, they might make it to the age of 50 or 55 or 60 years old. Look what we've had given to us on a silver platter. I don't think that we can whine and moan and complain about the prospect that lies ahead of us. And that prospect, if we are righteous people, if we are half righteous Christians, is a prospect of fighting to retain Western European derived Christian culture on the face of this earth.
You know, you are being a tool, I won't say a tool, you're doing God's work, and we can't ever be sure exactly what God is going to do. Shad, Meshach, and Abednego were back in Daniel's day when they told the king that, you can go ahead and boil us in this oil. You can put us in this superheated furnace that was so hot that it actually burnt the guards, threw them in there. He says, but we think God will save us. But you know what? Even if God does not save us, we're still not going to bow down and worship your fake God. So do your worst, you know. So that's what you're doing now. I can't tell you how much I respect you and love you, Simon, for the people, for you and your people doing what you're doing. You're in such a minority. We have some cucks over here. So many people here do not want to sacrifice one little thing. Our people call them the normies. They don't give a damn about what happens in South Africa. They don't give a damn about what happens in Memphis, Tennessee. As long as you don't interfere with their little cucked out job, their little bank account, the little house with the three bedrooms and a white picket fence, don't bother them. Well, you know, I told some people downtown about 2 weeks ago in an argument. I said, I cannot wait until you people are kicked out of your mansion. you and your wife, I hope and pray to God that you and your wife are living under a bridge. When if what happens to South Africa happens and it happens here, I'm hoping and pray to God they kick you out of your mansion and they drag you off in chains and throw you under a bridge and say, here, you can live under this bridge, but we're taking your mansion, we're taking your car, your bank account, taking everything, but you're going to be our slave if we let you live. I hope and pray that happens to them. You know, I said, I hope and pray if that happens in Memphis, Tennessee, if people in Memphis, Tennessee turn this city over to these savages, I hope God sends an earthquake right where I'm sitting, and I hope it takes this damn city down 100,000 feet into the ground. Well, people, that was the most exciting interview we've ever had here. I don't think you'll ever hear a more exciting interview. Please stay tuned for the second hour. Just hang on, and thank you very much for tuning in to Blood River Radio. We'll be right back in a few minutes for the second hour.